Market Street, just at the Embarcadero, there's this newsstand that doubles as a treasure trove of chocolate.
Red coconut curry, okay? Dark chocolate, crunchy coconut flakes, and a hint of heat. If I
open up the back side, Fog City News sells over 200 different chocolate bars, and there's some interesting ones too, with ingredients like lemongrass oil and smoked chilies.
Lime essential oil and dried chilies. And if I had you taste this bar with your eyes closed.
Owner Adam Smith is a fine chocolate cheerleader.
I tell new employees when I hire them, you're going to chocolate university. You think that you're going.
And Adam is defending a thesis on local chocolate.
The mecca of chocolate is the Bay Area in the United States.
And as KLW's Asal Ehsanipour found out, the Bay has always been a center for innovation in chocolate.
Earlier this month, thousands of people gathered under the glittering, iconic Ghirardelli chocolate sign for the company's 23rd annual chocolate festival. People like Barbara Durst-Taylor, who's here all the way from Riverside.
I am a chocoholic and I love to make chocolate desserts, and everybody, my friends, expect me to make chocolate desserts.
Ghirardelli's story unfolded during the Gold Rush with one of San Francisco's first Italian immigrants. Soon after Domingo Ghirardelli arrived, he realized his fortune was not in bars of gold, but chocolate. He sold chocolate candy and other goods to gold miners. Well over a century later, Ghirardelli is the oldest continuously operating chocolate manufacturer in the U.S., older than even Hershey.
Ghirardelli of San Francisco. We craft the most indulgent chocolate.
Ghirardelli has always branded itself as a bastion of San Franciscan chocolate.
We pour our hearts into every square.
But there is another chocolate company with an almost identical origin story. During the Gold Rush, Etienne Guittard, who learned to make chocolate at his uncle's factory in France, originally traded chocolate for mining supplies. But he returned to France, brought back his own equipment, and founded Guittard Chocolate Company.
We are seeing 10-pound bars being deposited in a machine that's really pretty darn old, but it works really great.
President and CEO Gary Guittard shows me the complex process of making chocolate.
This is where it all starts.
Yeah. It starts with burlap bags that stack to the ceiling, full of fermented cocoa beans.
Single roasting of each origin.
Gary explains that here on site, they're then cleaned, destoned, winnowed, roasted, and ground.
But it's basically like grinding peanuts. When you grind peanuts, you get peanut butter. And when you grind the nibs, you get unsweetened chocolate.
We dart puddles of that unsweetened chocolate, weave through heavy machinery, and duck under pipes throughout the tour. The space is stuffy until we reach a cool area with finished chocolate chips, the tiniest I've ever seen.
10,000 chips to a pound, so these are little teeny tiny guys.
For years, Guittard and Ghirardelli had factories just blocks away from each other, their smells blending and swirling through the city.
You smelled all of that stuff in downtown San Francisco. You could walk down Montgomery Street and smell chocolate. So that's gone.
Because both companies move production to the suburbs. Today, Ghirardelli is owned by the Swiss mass chocolate maker Lindt, but Guittard remains family-owned and operated. The oldest of its kind in the country. They supply chocolatiers like Charles Chocolate and Ricuti.
That is going to seize.
Even seize candy. Guittard and Ghirardelli started at the same time in the same place because San Francisco could import cacao along Pacific trade routes. Remember, this was before refrigerators and air conditioning, so San Francisco's cooler climate was key to producing chocolate year-round. Since then, throughout the country, most major chocolate companies ramped up production so much, the flavor of their chocolate suffered. They mostly used cheaper bulk beans, added a lot of sugar, making sweet but bland chocolate. Until the 70s, when Bay Area dessert chefs like Alice Medrich reinvented how they approached chocolate.
Can you describe that photo to me?
That photo?
Yeah.
In Alice's North Berkeley kitchen, she has a framed photo of her slumped in a chair, exhausted after the opening day of her famed chocolate shop, Coco Lot.
The first day? Can I take a photo of that photo?
Yeah. She's feeding me truffles made with three local chocolates.
This guy's dandelion. This is Guitard. I made very little sugar adjustment in these, and I used a lot of chocolate. So
that's why she's known as the first lady of chocolate. For Alice, it all started with a visit to France.
I had a landlady. We lived in her private home, and she made homemade chocolate truffles for us. Compared to the chocolate candy that I grew up with, this chocolate truffle was like a little bittersweet poem.
Alice tinkered with the truffle recipe back in Berkeley.
And people just went nuts for them.
They were packed with real, immensely flavored chocolate.
It wasn't sweet. I mean, of course it was sweet, it was chocolate, but it was very, very bittersweet, and it melted like satin on my tongue.
Because she used little sugar and no cocoa powder or shortening, Alice credits her success to the spirit of Berkeley at the time.
I think Berkeley was always more unconventional and accepting and curious.
Which allowed for more innovation. Berkeley customers welcomed Alice's European approach to ingredients, which then spread across the Bay Area and eventually the country. The chocolate truffles we eat now, Alice popularized them first. Back in the 70s, Alice helped change the scene by the way she used the chocolate. She says it paved the way for another chocolate revolution in the 90s, which innovated the chocolate itself.
Yeah. So, yeah, see, it's just endlessly interesting. It's like a whole new world of interesting.
So this is what you meant about, like, just sort of picking things up and experimenting.
Yeah, I mean, the whole new, this sort of what I like to call the second wave of this chocolate revolution, where it's all about the chocolate, it's just, it's endlessly complex and interesting. Mm. It's a whole, like, it's like Disneyland of flavor.
What brought on this new wave of chocolate innovation? A company called Scharfenberger. When a doctor named Robert Steinberg got diagnosed with cancer, he left his career and pursued a passion for fine food. He convinced his friend, winemaker John Scharfenberger, to join him.
He showed me a picture of this little chocolate factory he had worked in Lyon, called Bernichon. And I looked at that and I said, oh, we can do that.
People now compare artisanal chocolate to fine wine all the time. But back then, Scharfenberger broke ground by focusing on flavor, loading their bars with cacao, chocolate's main and most expensive ingredient.
No one ever talked about cacao, ever.
So, he says, Scharfenberger taught their consumers, even bringing cacao beans to trunk shows.
Everybody was like, what? What's that? People were grabbing them and eating them as if they were almonds. I said, no, their shells are on them, or whatever.
Unlike other American mass chocolate producers, Scharfenberger plastered cacao percentages on their packages. And other chocolate manufacturers had a Willy Wonka approach. No one knew what happened behind closed doors. So when Scharfenberger opened their Berkeley factory to the public, it was a revelation.
The transparency that was common in the wine business, I just transferred it to us.
To chocolate making. But John says the company struggled at first, until one day they assembled a booth at a San Francisco farmer's market. With cacao beans on display, John handed out samples. Within an hour, there were 200 people in line.
Robert and I sat down and said, you know, we just have to do this for the people. Forget the restaurants. That's where it's at.
Scharfenberger sold their bars directly to customers, charging just a bit more than mainstream brands. It worked because fine chocolate was an unsaturated market, and their bars were an affordable luxury. The company grew rapidly until 2005. Then Hershey came along. John insists they weren't looking to sell just yet. But after Hershey doubled their offer for a reported $50 million, John and Robert gave in. 4 years later, Hershey shut down the Scharfenberger factory in Berkeley.
It was really disappointing because it was working. And you know, we had so many people coming to it, and it was such a big part of the Bay Area. Really, it was a nice thing, and it was disheartening. I mean, I kind of had to put on my blinders and realize, you know, I had made the decision to sell.
Hershey's acquisition of Scharfenberger left a vacuum within the American artisanal chocolate scene. But soon after, craft chocolate makers popped up everywhere, and even companies that'd been around for generations knew they had to adapt in order to survive. Here's Gary Guittard.
And when John came out with his product, it opened my eyes to a whole different world.
Gary says the new artisanal movement exposed a weak spot he always suspected in Guittard's chocolate making. So he started making chocolate with more distinct flavors.
All the experiments we did, all the things we tried to do to figure out how to do it, really drove me nuts.
Eventually, Guittard expanded their repertoire of cocoa beans, started working directly with farmers, and revamped their production methods. These days, Guittard wants to prioritize flavor over productivity, but it's a tight balance making artisanal chocolate at scale. Guittard just expanded production, but Gary's nostalgic for the company's old San Francisco factory, the kind Dandelion Chocolate has in the Mission today. Dandelion produces two-ingredient, small-batch dark chocolate bars, just cocoa beans and sugar. They reflect the Bay's innovative chocolate scene in its most current form. Like Cho, another local craft chocolate, Dandelion's president and CEO, Todd Misonis, has roots in tech.
A couple guys in a garage wanted to make some chocolate, got some machines, just saw if we could do it, and before we knew it, we were making chocolate.
So Todd brings a sort of Silicon Valley maker mentality to chocolate, but he's inspired by more than the startup world.
So I remember when I had my first bite of Scharfenberger, I didn't know that chocolate could taste this way.
Which is why Todd was personally affected by Hershey's acquisition of Scharfenberger. He says Dandelion probably wouldn't exist if not for the sale. Using Scharfenberger as pioneers, Dandelion invites customers behind the scenes through classes and their cafe, even trips to cacao farms abroad. Todd says it's the Bay Area's long history of chocolate that's ushered this current shift.
I think it's the most exciting time for chocolate in the last 150 years. And it's definitely one of the most exciting times to be in the Bay Area since the Gold Rush.
Todd says we'll see even more evolution in chocolate over the next 10 to 15 years. And it's likely to advance right here, because the Bay Area is and always has been ground zero for chocolate innovation. In San Francisco, I'm Asala Sanipour for Cross Currents.